PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Hello, you golfing legends, and welcome back to another episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and joining me once again is Mr. Master Yagley, Mike Yagley, Cobra Puma, laughing at my intro as always.
That's because it's spectacular.
Welcome.
You're the best
back.
At what you do. Don't ever change, baby.
Yeah. you try and convince me that once in a while.
No.
I trust you more to build golf clubs than to have that. But
and it's really good to be here.
Oh, are you thirsty? Wow. So for those who are listening into audio, Mike just grabbed the Morgan Cup trophy and took a drink of, what would you say?
Yeah.
Satisfaction? Because there wasn't liquid in there.
No. It's emotional, intellectual satisfaction. And for the record, in case someone watches the Little Rats pod or video, he might have been hosting a previous trophy. This is the reigning 2024 Morgan Cup trophy. Okay? Let's be really clear about that.
I love it.
Yeah.
You couldn't look happier, which is the best
part.
No
shit, no.
So I think everyone on the forum want to know, since there are multiple versions of the Morgan Cup, do you guys walk around the office carrying it like from point to point? Do you ever cross paths in the hallway both carrying a cup?
I do occasionally, but he's in the office today, which he almost never is because he's just traveling the world talking to people because that's what he loves to do. I'm going to cruise by his office with this trophy today for sure. Oh yeah.
Yeah. I think he'll know what's going on then.
Oh yeah. He'll have a clue.
Well, the best part is these get recorded and then, posted at different times. But
yes.
In reality, this conversation is actually 24 hours departed from a conversation I had with him.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fresh on memories for you guys now.
Oh, totally.
So, but either way, it's 2025 and I know you are big into future programs and process at Cobra over there. Are you thrilled with the new year's upon us?
Oh yeah. Yeah. So excited for this year. Oh my gosh. We could kill it. I just want to get the product in people's hands and have them enjoy it because it's so good for all sorts of reasons. We'll get into it, but yeah, I'm super excited for it. Yeah.
And that's the crazy part. I feel like the last couple shows I've had you on, we've had huge conversations about things that are happening at Cobra that are pretty wild. Things like 3D printed irons, which, let's be honest, have blown some minds. So far as I've seen on the THP forums, you and Hose have both said crazy things about them, which I completely believe. And it's like, all right, what's next? How do you get to that next level to continue to convince people like, hey, we are serious in this business. We are serious about getting the product that works best for your game into your hands and that continued evolution.
So we keep doing what we're doing. You're going to see stuff show up in tour players' bags, which is really exciting. Things that are semi-prototypical and some things that are like very commercial, but just more stuff that's just going to indicate how we're leading. Cobra's leading in many, many aspects of golf technology.
I've always been really fascinated at the tour side of things, how they adapt to it or adopt to it. I was going to say adopt and then move into adapt. I really blew that. I'm
that
so
beautiful.
Disappointed.
No, that was awesome.
I've been so ready to use that. But
we
talk a lot about tour adoption of product and the time it takes to get into it, the tweaks that are necessary to convince them that it's worth putting in play. And we've had this conversation before, Mike. I'm an F9 believer. I've never stopped obsessing over that head. And I've always looked at it like going from that next progression, you had to really convince me that I had to get out of that head. So, we have DS Adapt, which is a clear step forward, I think, which you'll describe to us. But it's not to say that the last version's bad. So when you have these people who are very fond of your previous product, you have to keep raising that bar to convince them that like you guys are doing things that really support their game.
And that is not easy. I'm not whining, not crying, right? It's just, you're right. You have to convince them, and it's not easy. This year, it's going to be a hell of a lot easier than any other year we've had in the past, like five, because the DS Adapt has all sorts of things going on with it that truly make it better than last year's product and anything previous to that. It's fun. You've already, you know, thrown out the Adapt word. And I mean, quite literally, as you look at those drivers, you can point to like 1, 2, 3, 4 different things which truly helped create that name, DS Adapt. There's four heads. You got a super low spin compact head in the LS. You've got the X, which is kind of that speed demon, forgiving enough for the masses. Then you've got a Max K, which is super forgiving, and then a Max D, which is all about not hitting it right or left if you're a lefty. So we're adapting the shapes and the profiles and the mass properties for each player. And then you get into the heads and you're adapting the weighting system for each player. And then ultimately, I'm going to say this 5 times today, it is the golfer and the fitter's responsibility to make sure once they've got the right shaft, the right head, they've got the right weighting system, because it's all kind of dialed in. Now that thing's got to be pointed in the right direction. Loft and lie. Just has to be. And the Future Fit 33 is just an amazing, amazing technology improvement over really anything that anyone has, let alone our own, to help you get that face pointed in the right direction. So there's your 1-minute, 30-second commercial on the DS Adapt drivers coming to stores near you soon.
From the clouds, he says it. Yeah, so that is a huge entry into, I think, what should be the primary point of discussion today of these changes that you've made. I am curious about the name. How do you land on that? Because each year you have, I'm sure, code names. You have ideas in which to define the heads and what really sets them apart from others. Why DS Adapt?
I'll answer that question in a second. I like to tell stories. So you're right about the code names. Like in my head right now, there is Dark Speed Adapt, and the code name for those two, the code name for the 26 driver, and the code names that the innovation guys are working with for the 27 driver. So there's no less than like, what is that? 6 names running around in my head, 5, 6 names running around in my head any given time to describe a driver. So I have to really sometimes pause. If you hear me pause, it's like, okay, DS Adapt. Okay. I'm not going to call it Toretto or Walker or any other code names that might've come from Fast and Furious, right? Or Yoda, which might be the code name for some other driver, right? We really do have to focus, and it's super fun. Okay. So back to our regularly scheduled question, DS Adapt. I don't know how much Hose told you, but I love telling this story. Every year we are tasked with coming up with a new product. You know, in some years, some products, it's like every 2 years, but let's say in the mainstream drivers, it's every year coming up with a new product and a new name. And quite frequently we are told in design and innovation that it can't look like last year's driver. It just can't, right? Because retailers and consumers are going to go, well, that looks like last year's driver. So literally a year ago, we present what the 2025 driver is going to be named and look like to the international product and marketing teams. And any of your listeners that are old enough to remember the Muppets show, and I always call this a Muppets episode, when the Muppets just go crazy over something. When we showed them what 25 is going to look like, they freaked out. It was like a Muppets episode. And we're like, what's going on? They said, well, it looks too different from Dark Speed. I'm like, what? You always tell us it's got to look different, right? And they're like, no. Dark Speed's awesome. You need to keep with that theme. We're like, well, thanks. But 6 months ago, when we first talked to you about this, you agreed that it can't look like Dark Speed. And we already had backups, and we scramble, and we're like, you know, Adapt is a great name for this. Between We'll go from what I said last. The Future Fit 33, the shapes, the internal weighting system, the external weighting system. This is all about adaptability. So that's a hell of a name. So there was born DS for Dark Speed, Adapt. And it's really grown on me. At first, I'm like, what? That's kind of interesting. But now that I really think about it, it's like, yeah, that's what we're doing with this driver. We're adapting it to your game, to your swing. And we're doing it like numerous ways.
Yeah, I think the point of conversation that's always curious to me is you see companies or even you guys, you change the naming structure completely. You assume that there's a brand new technology that is completely separate and requires its own version of in the industry a product. So, you know, I feel like they have these like standalone moments, but you guys have carried this speed word around for quite some time, which I think is great. But when I see DS, to me, I react as, okay, so there's continuation, but then there's this huge component of Adapt, which is the primary focus of the name. So it tells me that there's a lot more going on to accommodate the individual golfer than what we've seen in the past. So yeah, of course, Future Fit 33 is going to be a huge conversation point. And I think you see that and your reaction immediately goes to that, but I don't think that's the extent of it here. So let's hold on the adapter part of that component of it. And I really like to break down the heads a little bit because people get really concerned when they're sort of stuck in an individual option. And for a long time, I was stuck in the low spin or LS option. And I'm starting to see companies react to that and give me multiple heads to choose from that will change whether it's a spin issue or a forgiveness issue or a face angle issue. I feel like I'm getting more options that work for me within that realm. And I'm also seeing a lot of conversation on THP where they're having that experience. Well, I used to be fit into this, but now I had the option of two heads and I went this way this year. Maybe next year I'll go the other way. It's like, I feel like there's an extension of opportunity for each player. It's not just landing in the head. It's picking from the heads that now work for your game. So we have four models in DS Adapt. Why four? And once we get done with the why, I'd really like a breakdown of how each of them differentiate from one another.
I'll give you the short, curt answer, which is we did four because it made sense. All right. And
all right. Good show. Thanks, Mike. Yeah, we'll see you.
And it's a wrap. Yeah. You could argue that there are X number of player types, and I've heard anywhere from 6 to 20 different player types. Okay. Depending upon the research that's been done and the documentation and research papers that have been published. But from a driver standpoint, we looked at it and said, there's definitely four because we used to have three. Okay. We had an LS, we had an X, and we had this max driver. And I'll start at that max end of the spectrum. We were not doing those two golfers the best service or justice that we could in that. Sure, you could put a back weight in our previous max driver and you're going to get a decent amount of moment of inertia. Or you could put that weight in the heel and get a decent amount of left bias or right if you're left-handed. But it wasn't the best we could do. And we knew that in innovation. We knew it in research. We knew it in design and development. We knew it. It's just, do we really want to go to four SKUs? And I don't know if we wore down senior management or wore down sales or hose or, you know, who snapped whom, but at some point we're like, look, if you really want to make the best drivers on the planet, we got to break that into two. And then people are like, four? Are going to have four drivers? Can we combine the LS and the X into one? We're like, probably not the smartest thing to do because there's a lot of people that cannot handle super low spin, just can't handle it. So there's kind of the background. Break the max into two and could not join the LS and the X. Just they're too different. So now if we walk through all of them, that LS And when people see it, especially like the top-down address view, they'll see that it's, you know, more compact, more pear-shaped, more classic, elite tour, better player sort of shape. Has two weights up front, so you can do the left, right. It's got a weight in the back, which throwing the little rat under the bus, he's like, you never, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, he said, you can't put a back weight on a front weight driver. It doesn't make any sense. It'll be, you know, too confusing. But there were some players who were like, I love the shape. I love everything about it, but I just can't spin it enough. And so from a utility standpoint, we put that back weight port in, and that's been kind of a home run for us in that LS category. You got somebody who like loves that shape, but they can't quite spin enough. Well, put the weight in the back. And that'll give them a couple hundred RPM more spin. And it could go from, I'm on a knife edge, and if I miss it a little, I'm dead, to now it spins enough and I'm going to be just fine. And I'm going to go way into the weeds on this one. So we looked at that head and the X. So this applies to both of these heads. And we're like, you know, for a person who wants to play a 9.0 lofted driver, they can handle the low spin. That's, I mean, they've got a lot of club head speed. They probably naturally have a lot of spins. So like they can handle that low lofted version. But then the people who want a little higher lofted version, it's like, they, it's probably mostly like chasing spin. That's a big deal. Everybody wants speed, but you got to make sure your spin's okay. Not too high, not too low. It's got to be just right, Goldilocks. So we took both of those clubs have a forward low CG bridge in the 9 degree. We took it out in the 10.5 because we just knew that player was going to appreciate just a tiny bit more spin. So again, way inside baseball, or in this case, inside the club head. But as we talked about adapting these club heads, we're doing it. I mean, we're doing it ways you can't see and ways you can see. But we're trying to do everything we can to make these club heads more playable for this, the player who's going to get into that, the head shape that's right for them. And then even between lofts, it's like, ooh, we can do some little bitty things that will really help that player hit better golf shots. So, yeah.
I was going to say that that is a visual you've provided on your website, which is crazy.
Yeah.
I have two one comment and one question. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is the first time that you guys have made adjustments based on loft or head from a spin perspective. I feel like I remember sitting in the fishbowl there and hearing stories about faces that have different location points having impactful. So I feel like you've been refining that logic and understanding that there are different needs for different players. Mm-hmm. But then it follows up with my question is, those were things that didn't have a real defined impact on sound. And I feel like when you alter weight, you move it from the front to the back, there's a chance that could impact the sound. Is that true or no?
Oh, hell yes. We can think back only as far as like, I'll go a little further back. I'll go to the F6 driver, F6 plus. You put the weight in the middle of that track that was front to back, and that thing sounded like ass, as some people might say. It just did not sound good. Performed really good. It was really, really good. I've heard rumors that some of our competitors nearby may have used that as a control club for a while because it was so freaking good, but it didn't sound good. You can't put mass on big flat areas, heavy mass, like extra mass in big flat areas or unsupported areas, because it's going to vibrate like a drum. It's going to vibrate easier. The frequency is probably going to go down. The volume's going to go up. All those things are just not good. Not good at all. In this particular case, we're avoiding that drum head immensely because we're taking what was the bridge mass, which again is not really attached to the outer structure of the body. It's attached heel and toe up front, and there's a lot of stiffness in that area near the face, heel toe, which is fine. You want to make sure that you don't have a lot of stiffness like in the center face in that structure. So we're taking that mass, which wasn't a troublesome mass to begin with, and we're putting it in the back. So it's nowhere near that flat sole surface. So you are correct, Mr. Wizard, that we had to be very conscious of it. In this particular case, it wasn't a big deal because the mass just wasn't in a real critical place. Now, I will say we still have to be very careful with the LS because it does have a weight, you know, heel toe weight. So there needs to be enough stiffness there. And in the X, there is a center mass. It's not as big as the bridge, but there is a center mass in which you can flip the weight from the center back to the back. Again, got to make sure it's stiff enough because we do not want in any of the weight configurations for this thing not to sound good or these things not to sound good. So you're right, Daniel. We have to pay great attention to that.
I think the interesting thing is twofold for this. Number one, different speeds create different sounds, and resolving that from a company perspective, you know, I have the privilege of playing with a couple very unique to each other golfers every weekend. So when there's a demo day at the golf course, we spend a little time all hitting, and it's crazy the difference between our fastest swinger and our slowest swinger, mm-hmm. the sounds that come off these club heads that are identically built, identically constructed, and hit within, you know, a minute of each other. So the idea that I'm going to go in the weeds myself, but
I'm just going to
take it right now because I really, I'm so frustrated at how much of golf is built on a bell curve. Like, we have a handicap system and it works great if you're right in the middle of the bell curve on everything. We have all these products that are designed and they work great if you're right in the middle of the bell curve. And it's like solving for these outliers. And I believe that I'm an outlier in a number of different ways from like what fits and what works perspective. The chance to connect those dots and bring people closer to a head that works for them while still maintaining what makes them unique as a golfer, I think has been a big thrill, you know, not trying to get my swing into the central location on that bell curve just to accommodate each product. Do you see from an industry perspective or even from Cobra's perspective, being able to fill that void a little bit better, like people not having to make such big concessions on what makes their game great, but also helps them what makes their game bad?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to start with patting ourselves, Cobra Golf, on our collective backs. And where I've heard from retailers and other, you know, people that are just kind of in the know, they're like, you know, what we really love about Cobra is you are willing to go to the extremes. You're willing to not just cater to the center of that bell curve. Cause I would argue, as you know, people that understand statistics and you picture this bell curve, which sure there is one, but I don't think it's as bell shaped as people think. I think it's a hell of a lot flatter than people think because case in point, if it was so bell curve, we wouldn't have four drivers. Okay. We just wouldn't, we'd have like one. Okay. And within those drivers, so let's say you've got somebody who fits into the Mac K driver and they fit pretty well. Yeah. It's a bell curve for those players, but it's not as steep, I don't think, or as pointed in the middle as people might think. That's why we have in that particular driver, the main part of the adjustability is the Future Fit 33, which again, I'll say numerous times, helps you point that thing in the right direction. And we're talking about a massive swing in lie angle, plus and minus 2 degrees, in loft, plus and minus 2 degrees. I mean, if somebody's hitting a 250-yard drive, and they don't change their swing when they see the ball flight change, they just swing it and they swing it and they swing it. They could see a 30-yard change in left, right, down range. That's massive. You know, that's the difference between it's in play and I've got a shot at hitting this green and I have to chunk it out. So I agree with you, Dan. And again, Cobra willing to play in the extremes. We will be able to fit you know, I don't know what the number is going to be. 99.7% of all golfers. I mean, there's still golfers out there that, you know, do really funky things, but we're going to be able to fit a lot of golfers into these drivers, and they don't have to compromise their swing. They swing their swing, and we'll be able to put them into a club that works well with their swing. Yeah, that the whole bell curve thing.
That guy said right there, your swing.
There you go. Yes. Yeah.
So that adds into the second part of my question, which I was going to ask, but then decided to go on a little mini tirade, which I think stems from like 3 months of bitching about a handicap and the challenges of that system. But we'll leave that for another time.
Yeah.
The sound difference. I'm so curious about that. When you look at the heads that are likely going to end up in the faster players' hands versus the heads that are going to end up in likely the folks who need a little bit of spin and launch support, there's an understanding that the speeds are going to be different collectively. Do you try and promote different sounds based on that? I assume they don't. You don't try and match the same sound between the two heads.
Correct. Yeah. And it's, I'm sorry. I think you started with sound and we went into the bell curve. And so I went on that one for a while. I'm glad you brought us back to sound, because it's a huge deal. Huge. Okay. And I would say, honestly, we're not necessarily trying to match the sounds from head to head or player to player within a head. It's about just making sure it's pleasing, right? We know it's going to be different. Try this one out next time. Next time you're at a range that has a wide variety of golf balls, pull one out that you know is like soft. Like those one piece, who makes that one? Srixon make a one piece? Somebody makes a one piece rubber range ball. Okay. So that one's pretty soft. And then find a super hard, old school, call it a top flight, whatever you want to call it, hard call cover, it high compression. Okay. Hit those two side by side. And not only is it club head speed, other factors in delivery, hit location, but you go from ball to ball, you can get massively different sounds. I can remember, I think it was our speed zone driver. I was out testing it and everything was fine until I pulled out a rock of a range ball. And like, I thought I was shot. It was so loud and so harsh. but it was an extremely hard golf ball. I mean, even hard for a range ball. So I was not super concerned about it, but I was shocked at, you know, and I didn't change my club head speed. Hit location was fine, but it was a massively different sound. So we have to accommodate all that.
Yeah.
We have to think about that.
That's the hard part, right? Because you get these guys swinging at 120 plus and they don't need any help making noise, right? Like they can do just fine on their own. And then you have a guy swinging at, let's say, 90 or more average 80 mile an hour. So your difference of 40 mile an hour, the audible difference between those two guys hitting the same head is massive, right?
Yes.
So like, how do you ever land on something you feel like would accommodate everyone without knowing exactly what everyone needs at that speed? You're welcome to answer this in 20 years when you figure it out.
Honestly, back to what I said before, it's like, it's not the cop-out answer. It's just like, make sure it doesn't sound like crap.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. It's the beauty in the ear of the beholder is going to be tough, because everyone's going to have an opinion, and you can have a really good sounding driver and someone absolutely loves it. And other one's like, it's okay. Okay. So there is, you talk about the bell curve of like swing performance, there's a bell curve of audible performance.
Sound, also. Taste. I mean, it's sound. All there. Yeah. I totally get what you're saying. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. So yeah, I think the answer, Dan, the short one there is just like, make sure it doesn't sound crappy. Because when it sounds crappy, pretty much everyone agrees. Like, oh yeah, that sounds horrible.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what a hot milk gun is for, from my understanding.
Yeah.
So. Is a lot of this adaptive internal what really makes it stand out from last year's Dark Speed?
Yeah. If you went model to model, definitely with the LS and the X, because of the bridge, no bridge, in the 9 bridge, 10, 5, no bridge. That's definitely the big, one of the big things there. Okay. And then, like I said, splitting the Max into two, the Max K and the Max D. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's interesting with the Max K, because I assume that's the most forgiving driver you make. Is that, or
that would be correct.
Okay.
Yes.
From a stability perspective, like face deflection or whatever.
Yeah. It's just, well, hit it all over the face. You're going to get pretty good response, because the moment of inertia about the vertical axis, the CG, and the horizontal one, is pretty damn high.
Yeah.
So it's a very stable head. I will say, can we go back to your bell curve comment? Right.
We can. Yeah.
When you were talking about it, you kept talking about like a player has like maybe two heads to choose from, which is logical, right? It's like an LS or an X, or an X and a Max K. The Max D might be out there by itself, although it could be Max K, Max D. But typically you'd think like you're choosing between two heads that are adjacent to each other. We've had a lot of players that have gone from the LS to the Max K.
Really?
I'm talking good players. We had our national advisory board players in about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. And there was a couple of them that said, oh, I would never play something as big as a K. No way. I mean, they were almost indignant about it. Like, no, I would. I couldn't do that. I'm way better than that. It took about 4 or 5 hours. Maybe it was a whole day. It might have been 24 hours for that person to go, yeah, you know, that K's pretty good. It's not bad. And then the next day they took it out on golf course and they're like, I couldn't miss it. Like, I couldn't miss that driver and I can't not play it.
Wow.
So you're going to see people jump two heads. I mean, I went to the K. I love that thing.
I think that's what Jose's in too, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. And he and I can't really play an LS because we're like gifted with low spin.
That's true. That is the word I would use, gifted with low spin.
Oh, geez. From birth, I had no idea. When I was a kid, I was not a fast swinger, but I would blow it by guys who were probably swinging 20 miles an hour faster than me. They were just big kids. And they're like pissed off because I mean, literally sometimes flying them. And we didn't understand physics at the time. We're like 13, 14, 15 years old. I get in the industry, I'm like, oh my God, I have exceptionally low driver spin, high launch, low spin. Woo for me, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I would blow it by those guys, because they were swinging so hard with wooden clubs. They were all 12.5 degree lofts and wound Bellotta golf balls, and they would launch super low, spin really high, and climb up and fall out of the sky. And everybody thought that was a beautiful golf shot. And I just go, don't be me, bam. I'm just knocking by you.
Well, I do have a question about Max K, because I feel like the 10K discussion has been a really interesting entry into golf. And there was always a fear that I had for diminishing returns. How do you land on 10K, and how close to the edge do you get where this actually becomes a bit problematic for golfers?
Great question, Daniel. The 10K thing too is like, okay, it's two numbers that are being added together. Moment of inertia about the YY axis, which is the vertical axis going through the center of gravity. And then the horizontal one, which is, I hate saying the horizontal axis through the center of gravity, which is perpendicular to an intended flight line. Okay. It's the one that makes the head twist. When you hit it high, it's going to loft up. When you hit
buddy,
it low, it's
people already up. Have to listen to these podcasts with you on at like, 50% speed. Like, would you relax a little bit?
I listen to 50% speed. I love it, man. Cause everybody talks so freaking slow when you listen at normal speed.
No, I'm saying God. They go even slower when you're on, just to try and figure it all out.
Oh,
all shoot. I got was YY and then axis. And then holy.
If you're looking down at the head, right, and you hit it on the toe and it wants to open up, that would be the rotation about the YY axis. Okay. It's just a vertical line coming out of the center of gravity. So it's just toe opens up, right? Now, if you hit it low on the face, it wants to twist. So it lofts down, right? You're just hitting it. So it's twisting. That is the XX axis, which it is rotating about. Okay. That's all it is.
God, I need a cigarette and a big whiskey now. Holy. No, that's actually that's a really good way of breaking it down.
Oh, you're killing me.
That's fun.
Okay, so now it's like, okay, which one's more important? And we looked at it and we're like, you know what? Just watching people hit, how they play, where they can lose performance the most. Like, we're going to put our eggs in more in the YY axis. So it's the toe opening up or heel hit and it closes down, right? And that seems to be paying off for us. That Max K, like I said, is proving to be very forgiving and very kind of point and shoot. Guys are saying, I can't miss it. You know, I normally hit like 7 fairways and I'm hitting 11 or 12 or 13. Like, why would I not play that? And they're not coming back and going, yeah, but it's really short. No one's saying that. Oh, I'm in the fairway, but it's short. Oh, no. There has not been one whisper of distance change.
Let me ask what could be a really stupid question, and hopefully you can bring us back a little bit on it. In putting, there's a lot of discussion on swing arc, and one of the challenges with like the straight back, straight through versus toe hang is the ability to square the club head back up. And mm-hmm. I think a lot of the conversation over the last year with 10K was like, man, there's a crazy amount of stability, but I just can't seem to square it up. So it goes straight, but it goes in the direction that I don't necessarily want it to be in. Is there a real fear with drivers with that, where you get to a certain threshold and it makes it either harder or easier to open and close the head?
Yes.
During the swing?
Yeah, that's not a stupid question. And okay. Yes, there absolutely is. There are some people, so it's one, they can't do it, or two, they can square it up, but they just don't like the feel of it. It's like, I can't play either a severely back-weighted driver or a severely front-weighted driver. It just feels too weird for them. But yeah, that is a legit concern. And we've seen this. Here's what we've observed humans doing. You're hitting some driver and you're hitting it fine. It's going pretty straight. And then we hand you another driver, and the very first swing you take, the ball goes off the planet to the right. I mean, gone. And the next 5 swings, you're fine. Because humans adapt to it. And what they don't know is we just handed them a driver that has significantly more moment of inertia, but the center of gravity is further back, and it's harder to close. It could literally be a 5% change or a 10% change in what we call, okay, stay seated, the moment of inertia about the shaft axis. Okay. So it's just what you're describing, like, how hard is it to close? And even like a 5-10% change, humans pick that up. Hell, the best in the world can pick up probably a percent change, maybe less. I don't know. Actually, I do know. And it's a tiny number. And so they are reacting to that. Now, what happens is after they see the ball fly, they're like, oh, they don't say it out loud. No one says, oh, but they just keep swinging and they figure out a way to close it.
So for something like that, would a golfer need, let's say a guy likes to hit a cut or hit a draw, and they say, but I'd rather just hit it straight. Would you need to alter a cut swing or a draw swing with Max K versus something like an LS from a workability standpoint?
Potentially. Man, I hate saying it that way, or, you know, the old, your results will vary. It is so flipping player dependent. You've heard me say this and others say it. You know, I can give you 2 drivers and I know exactly what they should do, and it does it. I give those same 2 drivers to player B and they do the opposite because a player is reacting to it.
I've experienced that a lot with shafts, where people have a really significant difference in the experience with this a shaft swing to swing. I don't know that I've had a ton of that experience with drivers, but it seems to connect the dots a little bit, where, you know, you're playing not necessarily to a miss, but to a shape with like these cuts or these draws. And then, you know, I think a lot of people would desire just a very straight flight at this point with the big stick. Yeah. And if that's what Max K can provide, I mean, you got a lot of people whose ears are burning right now.
Oh yeah. I mean, I've never played a driver this big with this much moment of inertia with the center of gravity that far back. And I'm not a super strong player. I have no problem turning it over. Zero. I'm hitting it really straight. Freaking thing's awesome. I'm not hitting any snap hooks with it. So that potentially could indicate, yeah, it might be a little bit harder to turn over, but it's not like it's, oh shit, I can't hit the fairway. It's not like that. So going down this rabbit hole,
yeah,
the players reacting to stuff, could be a tour player. I won't say any names. Could be somebody, you know, that our listeners have heard of. We don't have all the data yet, but I'm pretty convinced that you could have two drivers that have almost identical mass properties, but the alignment or lack thereof of the graphics on the head will make them convinced that one club is harder to turn over than the other.
Mm.
And so,
yeah, I mean,
I watch all that.
The way it shapes at address, yeah, even is.
Yes.
I remember you talking a lot about how Ricky, yeah, looked down. You were deciding when you had the rollover face on, that was speed zone, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. You were deciding whether you wanted the lines to be vertical or parallel. Yes. And yeah, got a lot of tour feedback there. I think there's, yeah, a great deal of truth to that. And I want to circle back on the other thing you mentioned where golfers can adapt to change. Back, mm-hmm, when I was actually pretty consistent, I could grab any golf club from anyone's bag in a range. And within, I would always say, give me three shots to find the, yeah, head and find the shape. And I could hit that pretty well after the third shot. It was never the first couple. It's always like, oh no,
yeah,
what are we doing here? But you eventually find it, which is an interesting thing. And part of the fitting discussion is like, don't just labor and don't ask what's there, because you're going to convince yourself otherwise.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yes. I've seen, so what you just described for yourself is utterly amazing. And humans
was,
can do that.
Was, yeah, yeggs.
is what was when you did it is when you do it next. How's that?
Maybe. Yeah.
I've seen tour players pick up a club that for us, for most mere mortals, was like utterly unhittable because we put the CG in just a freaky location because we'd used really strange materials, but you couldn't see it. You know, maybe aluminum where it should have been steel. And so the center of gravity moved a lot and most people could barely get the club on the ball. Might hit constant shanks. The CG's in such a weird place. Tour player picks it up, waggles it once, and hits it right in the middle of the face. You're like, what just happened? How did he do that? Yeah. Humans are just amazing creatures.
Yeah.
I'm so impressed with what humans can do.
I feel, yeah, badly that, well, I think this conversation has been incredibly interesting, and I hope people feel the same way. But there's something we really need to speak about, and it's a new adapter system you guys have created. I want to know from your perspective, when it comes to designing something like this, people can get really cranky when you change what is comfortable. And
really
yeah, cranky.
Really?
And well, yes. I mean, but, yeah, but I'll add layers to that. Listen, there is a lot of comfort going to the company, you know, their next product and saying, I love it in this setting. Let's go to home and start from there and, yeah, see what we think. And the other thing is, oh, I'm going to take my favorite shaft, which already has the adapter on it. And I'm going to only hit it with that shaft until I figure it out. You know, there's just a lot of, comfort in that continuity from release to release. But I believe that most companies only make this change when necessary and when it has a significant impact in a positive way to the golfer. So let's just lay that out there. And can you give us an idea of truly how much thought went into the new adapter system?
Sure. And I agree with everything you said in terms of people's comfort level and not wanting to change, right? Can I use my old shaft with this new, my old shaft tip with this new system, right? Please tell me I can't. No, you can't. And I'm sorry. Okay. You just can't. We're making a massive investment to put out all new fitting carts for this system. I mean, that's a big deal for any company. It's a big deal for Cobra Golf. And thinking back, we've been using MyFly 8 for a long time. It's like 9, 10 years, something like that. And Hose Jose Maria Alathapal, he persistently would say, hey, when are you going to give me my flight 10? When are you giving me my flight 10? It's like, dude, calm down, right? It ain't going to be 10. Just let us be for a little while. Plus, we didn't really mind make a change. I mean, the system worked. It was okay. Clayton Evans, who's in my innovation group, it's like he's been working behind the scenes and people hadn't really seen what he's been doing. And we dropped it in front of Hose and Dan and the head of sales and the head of design, Doug Roberts. And we're like, look what we got. This thing will allow you to have literally twice as much throw as a MyFly 8, not just a little under twice as much throw, but now you can independently, now they're not totally decoupled, but you can independently adjust loft and lie. And furthermore, it's not all in one direction in terms of lie. You can go in both directions. And their minds were blown. They're like, okay, number one, that's really complicated. Number two, it's not a lead story. Yagley and team, where's the lead story? Like, are you kidding me? Club head speed, get the right club, get the right shaft. Club head speed, how you deliver it, all that's important. What we can really help them with is where the face is pointed. And I can't, that's where I'm going to go. I'm going to drone and drone about like this. Where is the face pointed? So we have the system that now has two rings independent of each other. And there's an alpha ring, A through H, and a numeric ring, 1 through 8. And when players see this, okay, this is what's really cool. If you're listening to the podcast, close your eyes for just a second, except if you're driving. If you're driving, keep your eyes open. But imagine we're going to show you how this system works relative to you looking downrange. And A1 is a center setting, right in the middle of what we affectionately call this a mandala. Or people are going to look at it and go, it looks like spirograph. If you remember as a kid, the spirographs, right? Kind of looks like that. Well, it's because there are 8 rings and 8 settings on each ring. And when you lay that out, it's going to look like this mandala or a spirograph chart. And looking down range, you can now clearly see, oh, I can go flatter, which will cause the ball to go to the right more. And this is if you're right-handed. And upright, which will cause the ball to go left, lower loft, raise aloft. And on top of it, there is a QR code on the back of the hosel where when you scan that with your camera and you go to the website, it will very clearly, and I think pretty wonderfully simply, which is two words you don't usually put together, show you how the system works. So don't panic, people. Like literally in the presentations I have, we talk about it and I put these great big words up, don't panic. Because
you should lead with the fitting app, the adapter. Like the adapter should be the last thing in an hour presentation.
That's a good point. Yeah, you're right. And here I went to that last, but it's really nice. And it's web-based. You don't have to like download an app. It's got a couple pages on it. It shows you the right-handed view, the left-handed view, which by the way, this is the other beauty of it. That view doesn't change. It's just going downrange. It should look the same. It's just, if you look at it, the words have been flipped. Upright is flat and flat is upright because you're left or righty, right? It's all about what the system will do from a trajectory standpoint. And then furthermore, it says, hey, if you're playing with the system, start in A1. And if you're hitting a shot upper right, you don't like the looks of that, here's a recommendation of where you would go to bring it down and more to the left. It's about as simple as a complicated system can get. And then for the serious nerds, I'm almost done, Daniel. For the serious nerds, you can pull the sleeve out of the head and underneath where it was inserted into the club, you will be able to see loft and lie numbers. And it's anywhere, it's like a 0, a plus or minus 0.7, and a plus or minus 1. And when you do that, I'm going to put my glasses on and look at it. You can add the numbers. And if it's 2 negative numbers, then you've got a big negative number, like -1, -1 would be a -2. You just add that number to the stated loft or lie. So if it's a 9 degree and it says -1, -1, that's now -2. So you just put it in a 7 degree setting. So for the serious nerds, they can find the numbers inside the box of Wheaties. Okay. It's in there. Okay. Get the face pointing in the right direction. I can't emphasize enough.
So here's what I'll admit.
Yeah.
And I said this to Jose when he and I talked, Jose, I am 100% a set and forget kind of guy. I do not like tinkering. Yeah. Once I'm in the setting I like, I prefer to leave it there unless I switch a shaft.
Yeah.
Or I'm seeing very consistent issues. And this goes back to that concern I have with the way the face looks at a dress. It needs to look the right way, not correct, a bunch of different ways. So,
yes,
you know, that's big for me. However, I am also a massive proponent of give me as complex and as many options as you possibly can without having a negative impact on the result. So, you know, I'll never understand the thing of, well, I just want a glued head or I just want three settings. It's like, why limit there? Why stop? And I've said the same thing about golf clubs. You want to release 15 heads this year? Great. Just let me know where to hit them. Because one of those 15 are a lot easier for me to fit into my game than one of three or one of two. You know what I mean? So when I took a look at this, hang on, Mike, I'm almost done.
No, I just want to say yes.
I'm teasing
you. Yes.
When I saw this system, of course, the immediate reaction is, man, that looks complex. But it's also like, hell yeah, you know? So, you know, the idea of, okay, how do they explain this away? So what I did, which is what I think a normal person should do, is click on the website, go to the fitting information that's provided directly to you. And there's a very short, simplified demo that shows exactly what to do. And then you guys went and put, you want to put a QR code of like a, you know, don't mess this up QR code. Like, hey, we can't make this any easier for you. So, you know, I haven't had the chance to hit it yet to see what sort of impact it has on my game, but I see and understand the application. I recognize it from my Fly 8. This is a very significant improvement should the results show that. And especially because with my Fly 8, I was never terribly satisfied with only that subtle change. And I know there were draw settings, which means, you know, upgrade a little bit. And I always ended up in like a minus one draw or whatever. But the idea that you can really refine this and do it in a way that is super easy to use is beautiful. I think it looks awesome.
Thank you. And so I acknowledge Clayton Evans, who's my guy in innovation. Then Zach Majors and Stephen Mitzel took it in design and like really made it work in the club head because we give them prototypes. Like, this ain't done. Like, this is a prototype. Here you go. They made it really work from a commercial product standpoint. And then the guys upstairs, Chris, Luke, Andy, they took it and turned it into something just really, really visual, really visual.
So let me ask you,
Let
me ask you like the mic drop moment here. How does that impact you when someone just takes a look and says, oh, this is way too complex? And I'll add to that, Mike, without trying it.
That's what I would say. You need to try it. And if you show it to them and show them, as you said, there's so much content now. Great video on how Future Fit works, right? And all the static stuff and the stuff online. It's worth it. You know, you said something, going back to what you said about glued in clubs, right? And when we first started this conversation about, I don't like change, but the reality is golfers change too. Your swing changes whether you think it does or not. So go get fit. This is the go get fit commercial, right? Go get fit and it might be time for a different shaft. And I guarantee you that the time spent getting fit into one of these heads will be well worth it because as you have pointed out, like there's, and I've said it too, it's like there's a plethora of heads, mass properties, and now I'd say face pointing properties, loft and lie. And in there somewhere is a great head for you. And to think you're going to get as good a head with a glued in shaft is nuts. It just is. And furthermore, you know, we haven't even talked about fairways and hybrids. I've heard people get way more geeked about this system, the Future Fit 33 and fairways and hybrids, than they are about the drivers, because they can just, from a swing standpoint, now you can, if there's a turf interaction thing and you need to make it more upright or flatter and you want to make sure the turf interaction is really good, you can do that. And then ball flight and ultimately gapping. Dude walks in and says, I need a 227-yard three wood. Well, guess what? We can find it. If you've got the swing that can hit it that far, we can find that shot, right? Well, I need a 195-yard hybrid. If you got a swing that can produce that shot, we can find it with this golf club. Yeah. I guarantee that. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. I know you have a hard stop. And
that's fine. I'm having too much fun.
but let's be clear. There's a lot to be said about the fairway woods and the hybrid. And I don't want to discount that time by just cutting it in here. So why don't we let THPers hit it a little bit, maybe see if they have some questions for you, and we'll bring you back on to talk about some of those systems and then maybe hear some of the reactions from them. How's that sound?
I absolutely love it. Anytime, Daniel.
Okay.
Anytime. Yeah.
Well, hey, do you have any final thoughts for THPers who haven't hit this yet or folks out there who are curious about it?
Well, you just said it. The word was in your answer or your question, right? Go hit it. You just got to go hit it. Just try it, right? And, you know, outdoors is probably a little better because you can see the ball flight. But even if it's indoors, you got a decent launch monitor system, right? One that does a decent job of tracking the ball, spin, launch angle, speed, gives you a trajectory. You got to try it. I mean, it's exciting. I dinked with it for a long time outdoors without a launch monitor, and I ended up in B7. Okay. People can look this up now. And it's not where I thought it was going to be. It just isn't.
Hmm.
And
well, you know, the interesting thing you said about hitting outdoors, I would prefer that as well, especially with a driver. But the application that I watched the video in actually showed how beneficial having that shot shape inside on a monitor that you can actually see the way the club's shaping or the ball shaping is a huge benefit to this program. So if you are outside, get on a system that will show you the flight as well, not just like your visual, so you can actually see what's going on, so you can get into the right slot, or just tinker, man. You got 33 options to get better at golf.
and again, that app will guide them right through it. You know, it's not that hard. Might look scary, but it is not. It is not. Yeah, and I think the competition's, you know, is probably going to look at it and go, damn it. I can just hear the marketing and the sales guys looking at the, you know, product guys going, why didn't you do it that way? Why didn't you display it that way? It's so simple. Downrange flight. Where is the ball going? Right?
And that's another episode of Secrets with Master Yagley. what a show, my friend. Thank you so much. We appreciate you. You're awesome. Congrats on a great release here. And, you know, hope you have a big year.
Thank you, Daniel. And
all right.
Everyone have a great season of golf. Have a lot of fun out there.
New to Off Course this year, we have an awesome weekly segment called Shaft Education, brought to you by True Temper and Project X. Kicking it off this year, here's Don Brown answering a listener question.
Hey, everybody. Don Brown, back to answer another question. This is a good one we got this week about how do we go about developing a golf shaft? Are we going after tour players? Are we going after the general golfer? How do we start that process? And it really depends. If we're trying to develop something that is very low launch, low spin for a tour player, we design stuff in-house. We test with local good players. We got a couple guys we work with, used to be college players, still ball speeds in the 175, 180 range. They can do that testing for us first before we go out to tour. Testing for a general consumer is a lot harder. One, no offense to you slower swingers out there, but often slow swing speeds come with swings that are not consistent. So trying to find someone who can swing consistently but also has a slow speed can be a little hard, but we go find those players and we try to test for different launch conditions. You know, usually a tour player is looking for less spin, slower swing speeds, we're often looking for higher spin. So if we're testing something like a very lightweight graphite iron shaft, it's a completely different design profile and test parameter than something we use on tour. So long story short, very dependent on the kind of player we're going after, the kind of testing we're doing, and the kind of materials and design philosophy we take.
If you guys are playing golf this weekend, have fun. Make it count. I'm stuck in the snow, so I can't play. And if you are playing golf and you're playing with a buddy, tell them they're good. They probably need to hear it. We'll see you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.